You're listening to Face Off, episode 98, recorded December 6th, 2010. This episode of Face Off is brought to you by AgileTask. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. And RocketShipIt. RocketShipIt, the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking, and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. RocketShipIt is shipping made easy. Go to rocketshipit.it. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I am the other host, Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com, and those show notes are important. It's got all our links. That's really it. I mean, we put, you know, an outline of the topic, and if there is links and we try and make it easy for people to scan and find what's going on in the show. Let's get our news and follow up. So, this is a special news and follow up because I got my Nook e-reader and I think it's pretty awesome. I like it a lot. I wanted to follow up. I'm reading a significant amount more than I used to. It's much more comfortable to read. And it's not an LCD screen that is, you know, going to kill my eyes. So, but I hear that I am not the only member of the e-reader team.
Yeah. So I went and visited you this weekend and I got to hold the Nook in my hands and read it for longer than like 2 minutes, like you would in a store or whatever. And I'm just thoroughly convinced. And I went out and got the Kindle just because I did go and check that one out at Target, and you know I'm an Amazon guy. I like the back end of having an Amazon, and the device is a little bit lighter, and I don't know, but they both use the same technology, and I think just e-reader in general, either one you go and choose. Also, I didn't really think I needed or would like the video, the touchscreen color display at the bottom. I'd just rather have like a D-pad.
Well, let's get some more interesting notes. So today, it was funny actually today because it was like e-reader day on the internet, on Hacker News and Reddit. There was this giant Hacker News post of open source books that you can get. So they, what's cool about that. But another big announcement was Google announced an e-book store. But interesting development from that. Apparently the Kindle can't handle EPUB, DRM to EPUB or something like that. Do you know, did you look that up if it can handle the EPUB format?
I hope so because I really like the EPUB format because it's the open, you know, it's the one that O'Reilly and stuff uses.
Well, there's other formats too. I mean, it just depends on which formats your device supports. I know the Nook does EPUB, but I did notice in the Google e-reader store, they don't list the Kindle as a device they support.
Interesting. That would be definitely a bummer as, you know, I'm sure Google is going to have a huge library of books and things, and I'd like to take advantage of as many people as possible.
Yeah, totally.
I kind of went with Amazon for that reason because I figured the Amazon with all their power would have had one of the larger libraries to choose from, although Barnes & Noble is a very large chain. But now, I mean, as you pointed out, it looks like, I mean, if that's true, then that's, I mean, Google's pretty large, so.
So apparently, yeah, you cannot read EPUB on a Kindle. You have to convert it to the Kindle's format, whatever it is, the Kindle format, which apparently is not hard to do, but you cannot read EPUBs natively. So therefore, I mean, that's technically why the Google's eBook store doesn't support the Kindles, because the Kindle uses apparently a proprietary format that you can convert to. That sucks, but I'm glad to see more, this opened our eyes really with that O'Reilly sale that we had last week, where you get 60% off ebooks on Cyber Monday. Cause it was like, wow, you know, I don't have to buy books from the Nook if these publishers and stuff are going to add these formats out there that still work on my device. It's great. And the EPUB works, you know, pretty well. You know, I think the, you know, the specific Nook format or whatever, you know, I think the books from the Nook store, they take maybe a little more time to make sure they're formatted correctly on that device specifically. But, you know, the EPUB does the same thing. It pages turn fine, table contents, hyperlinks and everything. And yeah, actually the second book I started reading on my Nook was the EPUB book we got.
Yeah. And then, I mean, as far as the reading experience on the e-readers in general, I guess I haven't tried the Amazon one yet because I don't have it. But reading yours, it's kind of nice because you get just like a little chunk of stuff to read and you read it and you're like, okay, next page, you know.
Yeah,
you can hold the device in both hands. So left, right, if you're laying sideways, I mean, upside down, whatever. You can still read it. The fonts are super high resolution. You can change the font size. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of with you. I kind of prefer the medium to larger fonts. Just breaks up the book.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like I like to, you know, I'll sit back with the device back a little bit, you know, and crank the fonts up a little bit so I can read. Put my hands in a comfortable position instead of, you know, holding them up to my face. And I don't have very good vision in general, so it always does help me to have bigger fonts. But it's more of a comfort thing too, yeah. It, you know, they're great on the eyes. The e-reader works really well. I mean, I'm totally satisfied. It's, you know, for me, really, the reason I went with the Nook is just form factor. I like the keyboardless form factor. But, I mean, you're totally right. We went, you know, you held the Kindle and it was really light, nice and thin. It is thinner and lighter than the Nook. But really, I think both devices are pretty good. They're better than the – we stopped at a Borders when we were looking around for them. We stopped at a Borders, and they had all these other tablets that just – neither of them had the polish that the Kindle or the Nook had. You know, you could just tell they were e-ink devices, if you're lucky, kind of thrown together quickly. Like, there's one color Android tablet, but, you know, it was totally underpowered. It was very chunky. It was just kind of – I mean, these two are sort of are definitely the best in breed.
Yeah, I'm glad we actually stopped there and checked out what the worst or, you know, the lower end readers are. And so, you know, as it was a good comparison, you know, it's just little things like they had instead of the left and right ergonomic left and right hand on both sides of the device, they had one little D-pad on the right side. So if you're left-handed, you almost can't even use the device. I mean, it's just little things like that. It's just makes or break it.
Yep.
The other thing I think, I mean, it's the time for e-readers. The technology has improved to, like, it's no longer like an LCD screen you're looking at. Like, you can read on these things for a long time. It's really a lot like paper. And it can hold, like, 3,500 books. No longer do you have to have, like, huge bookshelves worth of stuff that once you read it, it just sits there and collects dust. You know, you have access to all your books on one device. I mean, you can read, forever.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon and Barnes & Noble, like, so Barnes & Noble coming to the marketplace really sort of stoked up the competition in the e-reader market, and they both started doing price wars. So really they're at much more affordable levels now. I mean, hopefully we'll see that in the future with some of them like the iPad, which iPad, I don't really consider an e-reader. It's a tablet that you can read on. But one of the big things I wanted was I do like to look at full color magazines, and the iPad has that. So once it gets down to a low price point, I mean, it would be a device that I would like to have. And e-readers have really done that. They're, you know, I got mine as a refurb for $100 for the 3G model. You can get new ones for both the Nook and the Kindle. The Wi-Fi only is about like $140, $150. The 3G models are about like $180, $200. Which is, you know, that's like your sort of, you know, average big Christmas gift price range for a lot of people. And we definitely saw that because there was none of them in town. You wanted to go buy your Kindle that day and play with it, and there's none of them in town because they all sold out like crazy on Black Friday. So, and they still hadn't been restocked like a week later. So, you know, they're great devices.
So when Amazon says this is like the number one hottest selling thing, it's actually true. We went all over town trying looking for one, and they're like, yeah, we don't have those, not even close.
Yeah, so check them out. So another sort of side conversation, and I think it's a good one, is that, I mean, I've started to really, as much as there is good free content out there paid through advertising, I mean, it's time to the point, I'm getting to the point now where I want this sort of long, you know, long format, good, really good content. You know, I'm willing to pay for a book because it's edited, it's long, it has, you know, vision, it's, you know, it's not like just a blog post or, you know, and it's designed to be long. I know when I go to read a book, I'm going to be reading something that takes a long time, whereas usually a long blog post, you know, if it's not scannable, you kind of hop out right away.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we're seeing this sort of shift in the market a little bit of people saying that, you know, free is not always better. And the general public is starting to say, okay, well, there's a reason newspapers, I don't think newspapers will die unless they get smart. You know, if they got smart and shifted their, you know, shifted for easy ways to pay and view online, you know, they're losing money printing the papers. It's, you know, we still want good journalistic, you know, content, good, you know, edited content, I think. And I think that the market is starting to shift that way and we'll see more of it.
Yeah, just some of the books, like one of the books I got was monitoring websites, you know, like analytics and different things. And it's really been an eye opener. It's a great book so far. But you could, yeah, like you said, like all the information in that book could probably be found in blog posts scattered all over the internet. But it's all in one spot, and it's been through, I'm sure, many rough drafts, and it's been edited, and it's the content's been moved around to be the most readable, the most comprehended. I could definitely see that.
You know, it's funny with tech books too. A lot of the times, they, you know, the editors do go around to find a domain expert, which sometimes you might find when you're looking at blog posts. But like a lot of these people, I've never even heard of. But apparently, you know, they're clearly domain experts, usually because the editors find their blogs and find ones, you know, or they, you know, submit stuff. But you know, they do a good job of helping you not have to go search stuff. And sometimes I'm willing to pay for that, you know. And actually, you know, if you want fiction, sometimes you just kind of have to pay for it too.
And there's a whole list of free books, though, that have been published. And we mentioned that kind of the Hacker News.
Yeah, we'll link to it in the show notes because it was a giant list of free and like free, you know, Creative Commons open source books. And there was an amazingly comprehensive list there. And so, you know, I like it was e-reader day online. It was crazy. There was this giant post in Hacker News as well that was you know, read the best book or tell us the best book you've read in 2010 and why. And there were so many good sounding books on there. I was like salivating, thinking about how much money I was going to spend on the, you know, the Barnes & Noble store. But
excellent.
Yeah, check it out. All right, let's move on to our geek tool. So it's no lie that Mark and I, we and our buddy Rob especially, we like the outdoors. We hang out and but it's cold out, so you might be thinking, what are you thinking about the outdoors for? You need to be inside with warm cocoa because it's cold out. Not true. This weekend, we actually went for a hike in like 3 foot deep snow. And so with that, you know, we're still thinking outdoor tools. We love the outdoor tools. These are our favorite geek tools, actually. So our geek tool of the week is the Ultimate Survival Technology Sparky Mini Fire Starter. Now what this unit does is it is a unit that creates sparks. It has steel and, I don't know, what is it? What is the steel push against? I don't know what that material is.
They call it flint in the back of the package. It said flint.
So it's flint and it, you know, creates a spark. No big deal. Those have been around forever, but this one has a unique twist.
So, it's kind of like a switchblade. You have a... You know, a pole, the flint pole comes out of the device when you press the button. It slides out. And then you can put pressure on the blade that scratches against the flint to make the spark as you push down into the dirt or the log or whatever you're trying to start. Mm-hmm. Or you can hold it with your index finger out and push the pole towards it. The bottom line, I guess, is it's one-handed. Right. You know, like, so what we did is we went out hiking and we wanted to test our skills and see if we could start a fire in the snow with just a sparker thing, right? Like this. I didn't actually have this device yet. I borrowed yours, which is the traditional, you have a piece of metal and you just kind of take, like, you're going to shave off a piece of something.
Scrape against
like a knife.
The flint.
And for some reason, like, I'm not good at that one. I can get it to spark, but I guess I'm not, you know, I couldn't get that one down. I feel like this one's a little bit easier to use. It's hard to, you know, miss strike it
The problem with those other ones is you get it down in there and you start putting pressure on it, you know, and then when you put that pressure down, you scrape it. And, you know, maybe if your sparks kind of go everywhere, they don't go right where you want it. And you know, after a while you kind of get a little shaky because it's cold and you're doing all kinds of good stuff. I mean, this, you can, if you wanted to, you can hold it in your hand and put it right up next to your tinder and go, you know, and push the flint down and, you know, and it should ignite and you can get good, hot, constant sparks on it. And we used our favorite tinder, which is you take cotton balls and you sort of, you know, mush petroleum jelly into them. They start with a spark really easily. Awesome killing. And we actually, you actually did get a fire going. It was really impressive.
Yeah, I got a fire started, and we used a Sparky, or not. Well, we didn't use the Sparky, but we used a flint type device where you make sparks. Mm-hmm. We didn't use a lighter or match. So
yeah, no lighter.
I was proud of our fire starting skills.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And that it was you in the snow. Yeah, I mean, you just don't do it a lot, and so if you think that you can do it in an emergency situation without practicing, you're a fool. So you should really practice your fire starting if you go out doors. And if you don't go outdoors and you don't care about sparkies, then stay inside and drink a cup of hot chocolate or a cup of hot coffee and stay warm. That's okay too. Let's get into our web apps of the week. Our first web app it's really sort of a silly, stupid one, but it's kind of fun. It's called shirtmockup.com. And what it does is it lets you create simple shirt mockups of your wicked t-shirt design. You know, you've been sitting there and you're like, man, I wish I had like this picture on a t-shirt and it's really cool. I bet it would look awesome. You can use this really simple web app. You can right now choose between two different types of t-shirts. They have a standard t-shirt and a distressed t-shirt. You upload your file, your picture that you want, your art, and then you can select the shirt color, rotate it and scale it. And it looks pretty cool. If you look at the image for this episode, it'll actually be a little face-off show shirt that I made on there. The only distressing thing about this is they don't tell you, like, there's no way to make this shirt real. I found it very silly.
Because it looks so cool.
The face-off one looks like, so cool. But they also provide, like, layered Photoshop files, PSD files, if you want. And you can sign up for the Pro. Oh, wait, no, hey, look, here's a get your mock-up printed button. I didn't see that. Oh, cool. We may have had a breakthrough discovery right here. Okay. Yeah, you can make your... Okay, so if you go to Jack Prints, which they have a link to it in shirt mock-ups, you can actually turn your mock-up into a real shirt with the click of a button. Or maybe not a click of a button, but there you go.
So do you have to do JPEG or... And
it
GIF
has,
or whatever?
It has to be JPEG or GIF. Yeah, they don't do PNGs.
Cool. So I can rotate it. You'd probably want to start with some kind of a transparent image.
Yeah, or whatever. You know, whatever tickles your fancy. I thought it was pretty cool. And now it's even cooler because we found out if you really, really wanted to, if you made that really awesome shirt, you could get it printed. We'll have to maybe think about getting some face-off shirts, get some cool ones, and we can be really cool dudes with our own big shirt.
That definitely makes it a lot more useful.
Absolutely. I was like, wow, that's, you'd think that they try to sell t-shirts on this website, but they don't. So check it out, shirtmockup.com. Our next web app is, I thought this one was pretty cool because if you do happen to frequent Hacker News, it's basically the same app on the front end, which is called Arc or something. It's written in some, what is it written in, Lisp or...
I think Arc is the language that's a Lisp-like language.
Okay. So, but what it actually is, it's called Bitly News. It looks just like Hacker News. But what makes this one unique is it's actually sort of an aggregate news website based on the number of links or number of times a particular link is posted using Bitly. So Bitly is a short URL shortener that we use. I think a lot of people use. It's a really cool website. And so this, you can go and see what are the cool links that people are – tweeting out or putting out on Facebook or IMing or whatever they use your URL shortener for. It kind of gives you just a cool, funny look as to what is happening over the entire internet. It's just at bitlynews.com. What do you think of that one, Mark?
I like this one. It's basically like the Hacker News style, which I use every day, and except it's, you know, more broad. It's a little bit out of the technology spectrum.
Absolutely. That's kind of cool. The cool part. Yeah.
I should probably add this to my daily morning ritual of reading websites, but
yeah, because Hacker News is, you know, it's a very specific community, and this is kind of cool. You can also, if you want, on these particular Bitly links, you can hit discuss and discuss them on the website. Pretty cool. So yeah, I mean, it has a lot of different stuff. It's a way to get a little more broader sort of news in the style of Hacker News that we are all hopefully used to using, because if you don't, if you don't know about it, it's news.ycombinator.com. I don't know how popular websites are anymore. I'm not really in the know anymore, but Hacker News is really great, especially if you're a web app guy. So check it out. If you, and I'm talking to you listening to the show, if you have some news, a follow-up, or web application you think we should look at, let us know by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Oh, actually, I lied. We actually have some feedback. Oh, but I can't. Okay, we'll talk about it. Hold up. This is interesting. So we talked about last week, one of our web apps was Get Glue, which is a really cool web app for sharing things like what you're watching, what books you're reading. I mentioned it specifically because I got my e-reader and I wanted to see what other books, you know, my friends were reading at the time, because Rob, especially our buddy Rob, he reads a lot of books. I'm gonna slaughter this guy's name, and I apologize. Gafitescu Daniel says that for bookmarking books you like and have in a library, he uses goodreads.com, which is basically like kind of like Get Glue. I mean, it's a place to post the books you're reading, but it's definitely geared specifically towards people who read books. You can, you know, if you're reading more than one book at a time, you can say, you know, that you're reading all. You can say, percentage, how far you're done with it. Add your friends, find new people. This one is very comprehensive. If you really like to read, Get Glue will work, but check out goodreads.com. It's really awesome. And thank you. Gafitescu? I feel terrible. I know I'm slaughtering your name, so I apologize. Thank you for the suggestion and the follow-up. We appreciate it. All right, Mark, let's get into our topic of the week.
Topic of the week is online video. It's kind of a big topic, but I think it's an important one.
Absolutely, absolutely. Especially in today's internet, it's become a very important part of it.
Yeah, and there's, you know, it's everything from, you know, watching TV on the internet versus, you know, using cable or satellite. It's about, you know, putting ads up if you're a business, putting up screencasts about what your product does. You know, it just encompasses all kinds of things. So I guess the first thing is you can host your own video, and a lot of companies do. But if you host your own video, you kind of lose out of, you know, the community aspect, like YouTube. If somebody likes whatever you're describing your company, let's take AgileTask, and you're describing your app and what it does, and you host it on YouTube. If people like it, they can, you know, put comments and they can like it. They can actually hit the like button or whatever. And it can become, depending on what it is, the video, it can become viral, and, you know, people can just share it and whatnot without having to go to like AgileTask. It can just do it all within YouTube. Mm-hmm. So it's becoming more and more common that you actually host video with somebody else other than, you know, you do your self hosting of the video.
Yeah, totally.
This saves on bandwidth costs. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, they use content distribution networks so that it's spread out, it's reliable back end, whereas, you know, your web host may choke on a larger video file. Usually they have a lot of specific, you know, player customizations and cool stuff. There's some free and open source, Flash video players out there. But, you know, they're pretty basic, you know, YouTube and all these other ones. They put a lot of stuff into their player, new features, cool things. So, it is usually, you tend to find it more beneficial to have someone host your video for you.
Yeah, you know, like these Android phones and things, if somebody links to a YouTube video, it detects it automatically. You can say play in YouTube and you're automatically watching it. If sites that use Flash video, if you try to go to their site and view that video, you can't. Well, you can with the newer Android update. Yeah. But
it's chunky. It doesn't work very well at all. Like I see a lot of times I'll do a YouTube video and I'll do it in browser. Because like one of the apps has a preview or something that kind of skips it, and it gets chunky. But if I open it in the, like, you know, I open it and it's like, hey, do you want to open it in the YouTube app? Yeah, it works way better. It's super smooth.
Another advantage of doing the hosted video is, you know, if you've got a flip camera or some way to upload, YouTube makes it really easy to edit and crop and upload your video. You don't have to go to your web developer guy and say, hey, I'd like to put this new video up. Usually you can just upload it to YouTube, and then you can copy and paste the embed code and give that to your web developer guy, or maybe even if you've got a content management system, you can just copy and paste it in. And typically it's like including a link on a page. A lot of WYSIWYG editors will allow you to embed YouTube videos, as YouTube is one of the more popular ones, as we'll see later. Totally. So what platforms so basically I'm recommending, for the most part, if you want to share video on your website, if you want to do a product demonstration or whatever, you should probably have it hosted with somebody like YouTube or some of the other ones we're about to talk about.
Yeah. So let's get into what, you know, YouTube is the big one you hear a lot about. What makes YouTube so unique?
YouTube is the whale. It's the big dog. As far as numbers, 52 million monthly uniques. We'll see later that the next highest one that I've got on the list has only 2 million unique monthlies, and it goes down. You know, Vimeo, I thought Vimeo was really big, and it only had 350,000 monthly uniques. I think YouTube has, it's more of the Facebook community style of video. It may not be the best host for video, but I think it's the best as far as community. And if you want something to go viral, if you think you've got something that has the potential to go viral, YouTube is definitely your bet to put it up there.
Yeah, YouTube, it's like the social network that I somehow really missed and didn't get into. But there's been times where, like, if you look at a video, I mean, the number of views and the number of comments is just massive. I mean, it really is a thriving community. It's just weird that somehow I missed it and didn't really get into it, but it's going nuts, and there's tons of people using it all over the place.
YouTube, if you want to bet for the long term, like if you're going to invest your time in uploading your videos and things, and you want to pick the one that's going to be around the longest, YouTube is definitely the best bet as of right now.
You're saying YouTube's long and not short. You know, you can depend on it for a while.
Google just came out with Google TV. I know the Boxy Box, and we're going to talk about some of the devices later, but a lot of them support YouTube, and well, good reason. I mean, it's the largest. So then we'll go on, you know, YouTube is great and it's got a huge community, but it lacks some of the features these other ones will have or are better at. So blip.tv. This one I've used before. It actually allows you to brand your own video player, so you can change the colors of it to match your website. You can have kind of a logo, and you can embed your main homepage URL into it. And you can also, you can specify what your related videos are. So if you have a product demo, you can have like secondary demonstrations of that product linked to it. You might be able to do that with YouTube, but I know Google does try to put as much other stuff with it.
Well, I think with YouTube, it's just they'll do, you know, if you have a bunch of related videos, it'll try to match it. I mean, in general, it just does the best match no matter what. So if you don't have the choice to say, I don't want any related videos. I mean, they may have a related video, which is a competitor's, you know, product demonstration or something.
So Blip TV is a great one if you want kind of your own video player branded a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the next one is Ustream.tv. This one's great because you can stream with a webcam really easily. It comes up with a flash interface. And if you've got a webcam built in your computer or have one attached, you can do recordings of presentations, a tech show. We actually used it as a trial in the latest Montana Programmers meeting, and it worked pretty well.
Yeah, I like Ustream. There's also a couple others. There's like Justin.tv. There's Livestream. And then what is the other one I used to – Stickam used to be a big one. I'm not sure if it's still around. But a lot of these ones, you know, you record the live event, but they also give you the option to record it so that you can embed the video later. Again, their focus is sort of the live streaming, but you know, you can have recorded and embedded videos, you know, as a product of that streaming.
Another one that I've used is Vimeo. They had HD first, when I was using it, they had HD first. YouTube now has HD, and
you sound like an old man. Back when I was using video and the internet, and you had to get your reel and recorder and put it up in there.
I really like Vimeo's player, and it's, you know, it's another platform. I think it's good. If you don't, I mean, if you're going for the community thing, definitely go for YouTube. But if you just want a nice player and, you know, high quality HD video, Vimeo's.
It wasn't Vimeo the first one too to put the like the comments. You could mark specific spots and add like text. One of these did. I remember because Gary Vaynerchuk used to use them all the time, and now YouTube lets you do it. But I thought that whatever the interface, and I think it was Vimeo's, but the interface that sort of did the first, like, at 3 minutes in or whatever, you know, pop in a message or allow people to comment at that specific time, it had a really, smooth interface.
You know, that reminded me as well. I think it's Blip.tv. YouTube might do this, but Blip.tv has an ad sharing revenue model. Like, you can say, I want to put ads in my video. So if you were a content producer and you had a video blog or something and you wanted to make a little bit of money, you can inject ads and you can get a share of the revenue.
Yeah, so. I think I know, I'm pretty sure YouTube does that because it's Google Ads. Google is even doing the video ads, so Google does all that, you know, ad revenue sharing stuff.
Okay. So the other platforms, these are not necessarily video hosting per se. These are more for like TV episodes and things. But it's worth mentioning them now as we're going to get on to some other aspects of video. Hulu and Hulu Plus now have a lot of the major sitcoms and series on there now. A lot of the devices support Hulu Plus. It's kind of a weird thing right now, though, is they're trying to block players in general. They're okay with you using your computer and watching internet sitting upright in a chair, but they don't want you on the couch staring at a TV watching their shows. But I think, you know, things are changing. But that's kind of Hulu right now.
Yeah, Hulu's big. Hey, so the one I was thinking of, and it's another one where you can host, is Vidler.
Vidler, okay.
Yeah, Vidler has the one where, like, you know, so Gary Vaynerchuk, in his video, he puts a little mark and says, you know, puts a link to, like, this particular wine or something like that. So Vidler's a really good one, too, that lets you brand.
Okay. The other one, Amazon Video on Demand, you can buy movies and TV shows as you go.
Totally.
I this is nice, I guess, if somebody's like, hey, have you seen this cool show, and they're over at your house, you're like, well, yeah, let's watch it, you know, and you can go, if you don't have it on Netflix or you don't have a subscription to Netflix, you just want to buy the movie, you can rent, for 48 hours on Amazon for, you know, a couple bucks. Zune has a similar model. I'm not sure. Does Zune have an unlimited plan?
Not for video. Yeah. So Zune Audio does, but with Zune Video, you pay X amount of Microsoft points to rent it, or you pay X amount of Microsoft points to own it. And, you know, but it does owning and renting as well.
Netflix, of course, is a big one. I have a Netflix subscription, and I use it a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, it's online video, really. I mean, there's video, you know, hosting and sort of user generated video, and then there's also like these new video platforms for really premium content that's coming from studios like TV shows and movies. But I mean, really, they've sort of moved hand in hand with each other. As sort of the YouTube and personal videos kind of took off, people are saying like, well, YouTube's using a lot of bandwidth, and so, you know, I think we can get, you know, we can stream and download our videos on there too. And so it really sort of moved together. And video is definitely a very important part of as the internet. As you can see now, or as you can see, like, our, you know, there's a lot of very successful internet TV shows now that didn't even start on any, they didn't start on any studio or network or anything. I mean, they started on the internet with this sort of, you know, user-generated video.
Yeah, so I would say previously, before, you know, this internet hosting type, you know, internet hosting video, these things kind of wouldn't have taken off. Traditionally you would have to go to like a network like ABC or NBC and like pitch your show and say, hey, I got this idea to, you know, do this or that.
Right, or you had to use like a podcasting utility, which podcasting just still hasn't really taken off. You know, having to have a device or software that downloads it automatically and downloads it and then you watch it locally is a harder concept than just, I'm at this web page, push play and have it happen.
Yeah, I think we're having this shift where people want to watch things on demand and they want to use the internet to watch TV, it's internet TV or however you want to say it, internet shows, internet pod, you know, web shows. Yeah,
well, this is where it gets weird. I mean, you know, it's funny. We say we're a, you know, face-to-face web technology podcast, but really we're just a radio show that isn't on the radio. You know, we're, you know, right. Like, we're you know, it's hard to say, like, what do you say? Like, a show? We're an audio show. Okay. But then some people are like, well, what does that mean? And you're like, well, it's like a radio show, but we're not on the radio.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely shifting towards this, and to prove that, I guess there's some really popular internet shows. Revision 3 has been successful. Lots They've of, got yeah. a number of different
very
types
good
shows. Of
shows.
The Twit Network, which is traditionally a podcasting network like ours, but they do also stream live all their recording processes, so you can watch them face to face, literally, while they're, you know, on Skype, you know, video, and see how they kind of produce their show.
It was a really interesting shift watching Leo Laporte do that, because, yeah, he did, you know, all audio podcasts, and then all of a sudden he was like kind of playing around with, like, when sort of Ustream and those started coming around, he was playing with it a little bit and realized that, I mean, people really like video and they like watching him and they like doing that. So yeah, definitely.
Another interesting one is the MIT OpenCourseWare. This one allows you to basically take MIT college courses from your home over the internet. You're not actually getting credits, but you know, you're getting the presentations, you're watching the lectures, you can download the homework assignments and things. Mm-hmm. This is great for developing countries and, you know, just people that want to gain some knowledge on a specific topic. You can just, you know, like if you're interested in computer technology, you can go in there and take a computer course on MIT.
Very cool.
And watch the videos. Google Tech Talks also are, there's some really interesting ones. You can see some really high profile speakers talk to Google. I'm not sure their frequency. I don't know if they have these like once a month or
I don't know,
or how frequent they are, but there's some really good ones. Like one that I really that I watched and enjoyed was the Git one, where they had Linus Torvalds, I think I'm saying that right, come on there and talk about Git and how distributed source is the way to go. And that was kind of a turning point where, you know, it was, people are still stuck, or, well, you're still using Subversion and we're hard to convince. And so they were asking a lot of questions like, well, how, you know, how good is it? And is
this
it really
is a guy that,
switching?
It's a guy they trust. You know, he's running a pretty big project. Another one I'd like to add in there is TED Talks. I don't know what TED Talks, but or what TED stands for, but it's these, you know, really innovative talks. Really, they're traditionally pretty short. They try to not make them like big, long, hour long things. So you go and the person gets kind of a small amount of time to pitch their awesome idea. And then actually from that, you get a lot of the books I'm reading now came from watching TED Talks. And it's like, you look up that guy, he's like, oh, he's got a couple books on this subject. Awesome. You know, read it and check it out.
TED Talks are amazing. I think they're like 5 minutes long and they're usually ideas that are set out to change the world to make it better. I mean, there's some really good talks there. The whole point of this whole segment of the show was that there's some really good stuff, and a lot of these take advantage of the video hosting platforms we talked about, and encourage you.
Yeah, so I mean, but this is also, it's not just limited to your computer anymore either. There's all kinds of like cool, I think, you know, the term is set-top boxes that allow you to watch all this cool video on your TV as well. I mean, it's gotten to the point where it's transitioning to the television. People are saying, I don't want to just sit and watch this on my computer screen. I want to watch it, you know, on my big 50-inch TV that I just spent a ton of money on. So there's a lot of really cool devices out there. The Boxy Box just came out, which I've heard is really good. We love Boxy. It's called the Roku Player, which is another device that does things like Netflix streaming and some of these sort more independent networks like Revision 3 and stuff. Popcorn Hour is one we looked at a while ago, I think last year for Christmas, but I haven't really heard anything about that. But of course, then there's also your traditional devices that are attached to your TV, like your Xbox 360, your PS3, and your Wii. They do like Netflix streaming. I'm not sure about other sources, but Netflix streaming is a pretty big one.
Yeah, that kind of hit the main ones. A lot of people, you know, Xbox 360 is a very mainstream device, and that's starting to host some of these things. I think it's, is it Geek Brief TV or one of those ones is on the Xbox 360 you can watch. which started as just like kind of an internet show. I think it's a Revision 3. Is it a Revision 3?
I don't know. The Guild is, which is a kind of a comedy one, but I mean, the thing is a lot of these, so like the Xbox 360, they added like ESPN video, all like the ESPN online video. They do the Zune stuff as well. They do Netflix. So, I mean, they're not quite as open as like Boxy. Boxy has a billion sources of video. It's awesome. But they're catching up. I mean, it's, you know, these devices are very powerful and they can harness internet video very easily.
So common business uses of video. We'll kind of talk about what you can do if you have a site and you want to get your video out there. So one of them is customer testimonials. I noticed Amazon does this with a lot of their products. You can actually upload a video of you using a certain product. So if you have if you bought a new flip camera, you can take a video with it and put that up. Or yep. If you bought a new keyboard, you can unbox it and video you using the keyboard or something. You know?
Totally.
Video success stories. You can talk about how great it is. Video case studies, man on the street interviews, market research. We've seen a lot of this from Google where they go out and say, I remember one specifically, they asked people, what do you know what a browser is? They're like, I don't know. What's that?
The
is
internet?
That like Windows or something?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's good to get perspective by doing stuff like that. Product presentations and video brochures, you know, talk about your product demonstrations, product reviews. It's kind of like the testimonials. You can talk about that. Corporate overviews. Google talks about some of their tech talks, but they sometimes they put out things that kind of talk about what they stand for and
culture,
things like that.
Corporate culture, things like that.
Same, you know, facility tours. You know, check out our cool office and our comfortable workspace. And how we're, you know, this might be good for maybe if you're trying to recruit people to work for your company. Mm-hmm. Training and support videos. This is a big one that I could see.
This is a good one because, like, you know, even like I shop at backcountry.com. And I got this sort of this cover for a thing for one of the things I bought. And there's a lot of comments of people who are like, how do I install this? How do I, you know, how do I use this thing? And I was just kind of goofing around and I finally figured it out. And I noticed that on backcountry.com, they, you know, it's like record a video about this product. And so I recorded a video saying like, hey, you know, this is how you install it. And I actually did a video installing it, you know. And I was like, hey, like that was so cool because I was able to help, you know, part of a community thing as well. But it also helps that company because now if anyone has a question when they're just looking at the product, they're like, oh, well, when I go to install it, here's a video on how to install it. It's nice and easy.
Another one, commercials and infomercials. You never know if you make a really good commercial, it could go viral like the Old Spice commercial or something like that. And people might just watch it just to see how cool your commercial is. So, and that's about it.
Yeah. So that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I'm on a podcast. I want to remind you that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can also leave feedback for the show using various methods by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. One good way to leave feedback would be to record a YouTube video for us and send us the link because that would be awesome and a use of video. So do it. Thank you for listening to the show, and we will see you guys next week.